Imagine a superhero universe populated with characters like Deer Woman, the heroes of Tribal Force, and Maggie Hosky, Monster Slayer. These indigenous characters, many of whom are women, draw strength from their traditions and cultures to battle evil forces. Now, imagine gathering together to celebrate these superheroes, as well as writers, artists, game designers, and other indigenous visionaries who are showing how sci-fi, fantasy, and tech can help Native people carry their traditions into the future.
Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and ethics. We're joined on this program by Dr. Lee Francis from Laguna Pueblo, the CEO and founder of Native Realities. Some of his current projects include running Red Planet Comics and organizing global events like Indigenous Comic-Con and Indigipop X. As the head Indigenerd, Lee is dedicated to changing the perceptions and representations of Indigenous people in and through popular culture. So Lee, before we take a deep dive into really what your work as an Indigenerd involves, could you just give us a little bit of background about where you come from, what it is you do, maybe what your doctorate's about?
Thank you again for having me here. So, Gwatsihaupa, welcome. And let's see, my background as an Indigenerd. So my family's from the Pueblo of Laguna on my dad's side. My mom's side is from Missouri, so I'm Anglo and Native. And Indigenous. I grew up on both coasts. My dad worked for the feds through BIA and also for university systems. So I grew up, you know, as a bi-coastal kid, a suburban Native kid, but would always spend my summers here with my grandma here in out at Laguna and then Cabero. And then when they moved into Albuquerque, I'd come and spend my time out there and, you know, really just have that grounding with home and my own home community. And so it was a really beautiful and fortunate upbringing because I had these incredible contrasts. My dad was a huge science fiction fan and fantasy fan, and so I grew up with that all around the house, and he never actually had a problem with me reading. So comic books were, you know, a big part of my upbringing as well, because it was something that my father was very much in favor of, any type of reading being positive. So I didn't have any of the stigma attached to comics. And one of my earliest memories is at Duran's Central Pharmacy down here on Central, going down there because they used to have the old magazine racks, and one of those racks, they used to have a comic book rack. Go over there and we'd have, you know, breakfast or lunch or whatever, and my dad would be like, all right, go pick out something. And so I'd get to go spin the rack and find comic book for me to take home with. So I have a lot of those. Those are very cherished memories for me. So growing up, that was always a big piece for me in terms of future sci-fi world and this existence. My dad worked in Native studies, worked in, you know, Indigenous and ethnic studies for his career. So I was always kind of surrounded by Indigenous community, Native communities, powwows, and et cetera. And then I did my undergrad in theater at the University of Missouri, and then came here to New Mexico and did my master's degree in educational leadership, and did my PhD also in educational leadership from Texas State University. In the interim times, I ended up working out at Laguna Acoma High School with my own home community. And prior to that, I had worked with BIA touring around Native schools. So I had this, you know, incredible experience of seeing Native communities, not just my home community, but like all of these comparisons and contrasts about how Native folks were living. And during that time, what I began to recognize, because we were entrenched in Native lit at my house, not only science fiction, but, you know, Native writers and Native literature, what I began to see was that there was this huge gap. There's all this work for Native, like, kids. There's picture books and things that, you know, draw, like, Native culture for young kiddos.
Sort of like affirming literature.
Affirming literature, obviously. Written by, for, and about Native people. And then there's, like, you know, just this scattering. And even at the time I was growing up, it wasn't even there, but there was a scattering of like middle grades, young adult type of stuff. And then it would jump just directly into adult literature. And there was some incredible adult literature, Native adult literature at the time. But for me, there was this gap that was really around comic books and graphic novels.
Like the stuff that maybe high schoolers or college age kids or people in their early 20s.
I mean, that's the native lit, right? Like that's the native lit that we know, right? Like that's the big names. That's Joy Harjo and Louise Erdrich and like, you know, all those folks. But there's this gap literature that's really, really, that I found very, very critically important in the way that I was growing up, which is that comic book world. When you pair graphic media and visual media with this, you know, with a story, right? Like a graphic story. And so, you know, as I did that in my education, I realized that there was something that was missing for my students in my communities. And as I continued, you know, my exploration of my indigeneity and who I was and where I came from, I began to really realize and recognize that there wasn't a lot that my kids could identify with in who they were and how they grew up. So I started this company, Native Realities, and the name alone tells us about it. I wanted to portray the native realities, the actual realities of being native, that were not about fetishizing tragedy, which is really what we see within Native history, the way that Native history is taught and the way that Native people are presented as a dead or dying people in popular culture. I didn't believe that because my people are still here and many of my friends are still here. We're thriving. There are a lot of struggles, absolutely. But, you know,
but that's not all of it.
But that's not all of it. Right.
That's everything.
That was where it was like there was just this huge disconnect. So I set out to fix it. I don't tend to be a person that's going to wait around for someone else to fix a problem. I've worked too long in systems and institutions that tell me that they're for my benefit, but don't necessarily end up being for my benefit as a Native person and as for my communities. So I set about starting a publishing company so that we could rectify that problem. And specifically for me is the way that I look at entrepreneur and, you know, in the economic terms is that there's a lot of work that can be done to put pressure on systems to change, but unless you provide an alternative, the systems don't have an incentive to change. They're not going to change on their own. So I looked at it and said, well, I got to provide that incentive and we got to provide resources and material. So we started publishing. And to date, I've published probably about 12 or 13 graphic novels and comic books that are Indigenous-centric, that feature Native superheroes in all sorts of forms, some historical, some, you know, futuristic and fantastical, but really capturing those stories of Native existence and identity. And then way led unto way. We ran a trade show, so our Indigenous Comic-Con happened. And then I was like, let's keep the party going and let's open up a storefront. So we got a retail shop. And that's kind of what brings me here. I love to joke with folks when I give talks or whatever. You know, I say, well, I have a PhD in education. People are, you know, pat myself on the back, whatever. And people are like, oh, that's really exciting. So what are you doing with that now, right now? And I'm just like,
publishing comics.
Yeah,
books.
I opened up a comic shop. And I love people's faces thing because the cognitive dissonance is just like so strong when you see that. Wait, I'm sorry, what? What did you just say?
I'm curious about this phrase. You're an Indigenous futurist. What does that mean?
So for me, what that means is really portraying Native folks as a pathway and a trajectory, right? So there's a number of them. The Indigenous futurisms is a term that was coined by Dr. Grace Dillon. She was really the one that formalized the term here for Native America, for North American Natives, and there's Afrofuturism and some other stuff that had been developing concurrently, but she was the one that really formalized it. And so I take her lead in really looking at the ways in which Native folks operate in a pathway that doesn't end in 1890, but that continues on into a future, right? We are a people that essentially survived the apocalypse and we're still here. So we want to chart a course forward. And so Indigenous futurisms for me are a map. It's a pathway that emerges in creative expression, whether it be comic books, whether it be novels, whether it be science fiction or fantasy or whatever. It's charting a pathway for Native and Indigenous people and our identity moving forward. So when I say I'm a futurist in that sense, I am, you know, an Indigenous person that doesn't believe in a tragic end to my people, but a bright and beautiful future. That continues on for my people, my communities, and all these communities here around North America.
But a lot of your work as a publisher, I should say, is dealing with alternate realities, future realities?
It's a mix. So, you know, like I said, with native realities, the idea is that we want to tell multiple stories. There's this paradox that exists in terms of native identity within pop culture. And we are fighting in these two parallels. One is misrepresentation, the other is erasure. And so the erasure part basically ends what we get in the history books. It ends our existence in 1890. The Indian Wars are over. And then there's just a few remnants.
You're either gone or assimilated,
yeah,
or assimilated. Whatever.
Yeah. And the conversations, you know, what you see in the early 1900s with Native identity is this struggle with assimilation. It's like, I know I have to assimilate in order to survive, blah, blah, blah. And it's always weighted and it's always very dramatic and, you know, like the melodrama kind of stuff. I mean, you can see that in, like, you know, the Jim Thorpe, the old Burt Lancaster Jim Thorpe, right? You know, here he is and he's, you know, he's like, but I am a strong tribal man, like all this kind of stuff. And you see this in a lot of the plays and a lot of the early movies that happen within Native identity. And then the other part is all these misrepresentations that happen from, like, the Westerns, right? So here's a group of people that are fighting for our homeland. We're the, for me as a nerd, I'm like, we're the Rebel Alliance. Like, we're Star, like, we're the Jedi. Like, we're the Rebel Alliance in
this
stuff.
You're the crew of Firefly, right?
Exactly, right? We're the Browncoats. So that's how I've always viewed it, is we are the Browncoats in this space. And so, you know, looking at it from that perspective, there's a number of stories that exist. And so when I talk about erasure, we're trying to find stories that people don't know about, that people haven't heard of. Mass media latched onto the code talkers, you know, and so it's only Navajo code talkers. And it's not in any way to diminish their service and what they did, but they are part of a bigger story.
Right.
And so when we created our Code Talkers graphic novel, we wanted to tell that story going back to World War I all the way through Korea. They didn't decommission the program until right around that time in Korea. So it continued on through. It just couldn't be talked about. On the flip side of that is taking, you know, these superhero stories of, like, the hero twins from these traditional stories, because always with Native, I won't say always, but the majority of pop culture representations of, like, Native traditional stories, they're very weighted.
Yeah.
And we're going to teach you some sacred knowledge. And I was like, cool. I appreciate that, but I also want to tell stories where the hero twins were, one of the guys we work with, Dale DeForest, took the hero twin story from Navajo culture and put it into modern times so that they live in the suburbs. But Native folks are still fighting monsters. In some ways, I'm correcting the wrongs, or trying to correct the wrongs, from the last 300 years, because now we do have a media platform.
But also in a way that's very accessible.
The Academy is really important. I recognize that that work needs to be there, because that's that critical analysis. But that critical analysis can inform us for an accessible media that allows people to dig deeper. When you look at something like Ghost River, and then you start to look at the Paxton Massacre, the Conestoga Massacre, and you look at everything that happened around that time, it really, for me, it just enriches the history and the stories of this country and how it was formed.
Well, and if you can make that emotional connection,
absolutely,
then I think that message or story comes through in a much stronger way. Where are you finding these people in your publishing community?
The artists and the writers.
The content creators,
I guess. All over. It's been amazing. Like, you know, there was this couple of comic book creators. They'd show up at Comic-Cons. Aragon Starr is such a great champion for this work. She started creating her comic Super Indian, I want to say, like, 10 plus years ago. And she still runs, you know, web comic for it. And she and I had these original conversations that were really exciting. And, you know, like, what can we do with all this? So as our networks and our Native communities emerge, like, this person is doing something, and then somebody hits us up online, and then somebody's like, oh, I've got a comic, and then somebody sends me on something. And so it's just been like these one at a times where we find these really great illustrators and writers and thinkers, these people that are doing just some incredible thinking and work around what it means to be Indigenous in a modern age, and creating media that can be reflective of that.
And you're also bringing these people together at the Comic-Con and in DigiPopX.
Yes, yes.
So I know what a Comic-Con is. I have no idea. What is a PopX?
What's a PopX? No, that's great. It's born out of the Comic-Con. So Comic-Con is very, in some ways, very narrow, right? We know it's about comic books. But even when we first started, our whole idea was to branch out from that. It wasn't just about comic books. It was about media and popular media. Over this last year, we've kind of transitioned and merged into this new festival, or this older festival with some new ideas, and really a pop culture festival. So the Pop Culture X, the X stands for Expo. So it's in Digipop X. You know, we don't want to limit what we're doing, where we're saying, like, it's only for comic nerds. We're saying it's an expo, so anybody can come down. We want everybody to come down. This is like like, this is Indian market for like pop culture nerds, right? Like, we want native folks, we want any folks, we want folks in town, we want folks from out of town, out of state, around the world to come in and see what native and indigenous people are doing that is just like blowing minds.
So you're trying to keep it really broad.
Very much
in,
so.
In that sense.
Yep. So the first year, you know, was we had four core areas, which was comic books, games, film and television, and science fiction and fantasy. And then over the last couple of years, we added wrestling. So we had native pro wrestlers last year. We had a wrestling ring set up in the middle of the whole thing. We had a fashion show that went with it. We've had things about, you know, how to survive the zombie apocalypse on the res, you know. So we have hit like these. We added food last year, and now we're continuing to do that. Foodie culture is so much a part of our popular culture.
But it almost comes back to what you were saying at the beginning. You were talking about how there's this very sort of rigid notion about what native writing might be, mm-hmm. or native art. And I think for a lot of people, that means something like Indian market.
Yeah. Well, let's do Indian market and let's look at all this other cool stuff where you can have a medallion that's a superhero medallion, right? Beaded and beautiful. You can have a shawl that has Captain Marvel on it when you're dancing or whatever, right? We often get into this either or. It's like, well, to be traditional, you have to do it like this. I was like, man, I know many of these artists and traditional folks that I go through and wander through Indian market, you know, and they have traditional jewelry and then they're creating like, you know, like a superhero beaded doll, or they're doing like, you know, they're doing pottery with native women superheroes on the front of it. It doesn't have to be one or the other. They should parallel each other, because the whole point is that we are able to take this as our traditional mediums. We can celebrate and honor that. And we can also take these as new traditional mediums,
right?
Or built on traditional mediums as contemporary mediums, and celebrate and honor those as well.
Fantastic. For more about Native Realities, visit nativerealities.com. For more about the upcoming Indigipop X, visit indigenouspopx.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance by Tristan Klum.